to the Culture Chat hosted by WorkExo. Our mission is to upgrade work. Find out more about our Workplace Genome Project at workexo.com. And now, over to our host for today. So hello and welcome to the WorkExo Culture Chat. I'm Maddie Grant, founding partner of WorkExo, and our big topic for today is actually about remote teams, which I know a lot of organizations are thinking about. And so I have two special guests with me today, and I'm going to ask each of you to introduce yourselves, tell us a little bit about who you are, what kind of work you do. So Rebecca, let's start with you.
Thanks so much, Maddie. I'm excited to be here. Really appreciate this opportunity and love that you have an audience that is interested in virtual teams and how to keep the culture alive in a virtual team. So I run a consulting practice that specializes really in four different areas. The first area is virtual team coaching. So if you want to determine what the ROI is in order to move your organization to a partially or a fully remote team, then I can help you do that and help you figure out how to manage things as well. And then I have three other areas of practice as well. I do turnaround work for projects. So project management turnaround. So if you've got a project that's going off the rails, I can help you get things back on track. And then because I don't like to wear the white cape, I also do some coaching. I want to leave the white cape or have the people in the organization wear the white cape, as I put it. So I do some consulting on that front and coaching on that front to help to make sure that you have the skill set intact within the organization. And finally, for small or mid organizations, I also can serve as, as a CIO. So when you're looking to bridge the tactical with the strategic and don't necessarily have the budget to do that and need just kind of part-time assistance, that's where our organization can help you. So that's awesome. What my organization does.
Awesome. All right, Tim, over to you.
Well, thank you, Maddie, for hosting me as well. My name is Tim Serantonio. I am Director of Business Development at Neon CRM, which is a technology and services company that serves the nonprofit industry and membership association industry. What we do is we provide a CRM called Neon CRM web design services. And then the thing that I am generally in charge of, which is professional services. What I'm in charge of is an extension of our in-house capabilities for, you know, if you need help migrating from Razor's Edge or something like that, cool, we have that in-house. But we also have a really exciting and new program called Neon One. And Neon One is an ecosystem of options for organizations. So to get out of the jargon, what that means is if somebody needs some consultation help on workplace culture, then perhaps I might put them in touch with Maddie here, who is part of the Neon One network. So overseeing consultants and software partners is something that I do, and I actually am our first remote employee. So I'm coming at this from the noob standpoint, as opposed to Rebecca's extensive experience in that. So kind of two different points of view that we'll be able to get, besides, of course, Maddie's awesome experience.
Yeah, so that's exactly why I thought this would be a really interesting conversation with you guys, because not only, Tim, do you represent kind of the remote worker, but you guys both work very much with technology. And I think, you know, one of the questions that I'm sure we will talk about is how much technology is the answer, you know, or not the answer to setting up remote teams in the right way. And I think I want to kick it off. Just I'll address this to Rebecca first, because you build remote teams. So the big question is, how do you build and preserve culture when you have distributed or remote teams? So Rebecca, are there things that are culture related that you talk about, you know, from the get-go?
Absolutely. That is a great question to ask. I have worked remotely for over 12 years. When I moved remote to Charlotte, North Carolina from Washington, D.C., like Tim, I was one of the very first people within the organization to work remotely. So I felt very strongly that I wanted to stay connected to the team, and I also needed to begin to build a team in order to serve the organization. So when I thought about culture, I really thought about what was it that we wanted to keep? What was unique about the team that we were working with? And what components of that did we want to very deliberately preserve and make sure stayed intact, despite the fact that one of the leaders, quote unquote, of the team was going, was moving away from the home office. And it was a very deliberate thing. Our team is very was very family oriented. And so we made very deliberate steps to make sure that that stayed intact. So I think the first step in understanding how to preserve the culture is understanding what the culture is and what components of it do you want to build, and potentially identifying some areas that maybe you're concerned about that you A, don't want to fall by the wayside, or B, you think may introduce risk to the productivity and happiness of your staff as well. So feeling connected was something that we wanted to make sure stayed intact. So frankly, one of the things that we made sure we had was we had some built-in socialization. So I was sharing with Tim this past week, I did some things like making sure that every single week I called people on the team just to socialize. I wanted to make sure that they didn't feel like, oh my gosh, if Rebecca's calling me, it means I'm in trouble. So we just called just because. How are the kids? What's going on? Have you had a good week? Have you had a bad week? How can I help you? So we did. We took some very deliberate steps. When we had team meetings, there was socialization on the team meetings, either at the beginning of the call or at the end of the call when we wrapped up. People shared elements about their lives. Now, that's not something that everybody's comfortable with, but that was an element within our culture that the team definitely wanted to preserve. We wanted family, and we also wanted a lot, we wanted a lot of laughter too. So I would typically make fun of myself, or, we tended to, have a lot of joking on the phone as well. So that was an absolute deliberate step. And we made a lot of phone calls and a lot of social phone calls so that people felt connected.
Yeah. Tim, how does that jive with your experience as a remote worker?
Well, so it jives very much with what I'm experiencing or want to experience as well. So I've been remote technically for about 2 months. So this is all pretty new overall, but there are things that even before I moved outside of Chicago, because kind of my little genesis is I've been working for Neon for coming up to 6 years now, and I started in sales, but then moved into this business developer overseeing role, and part of it was because we wanted to have something to be flexible, and we've always worked with organizations virtually. Like, we're not doing a lot of in-person sales or things like that, right? So even everything that I've done has historically been via a screen share or a phone call or something like that. So outside of my interaction with my company, it's almost that I've always been working in a sense remote with all the people that I work with, either if it's working with consultants or larger groups. And even when Rebecca was saying, we always started on the social side, there's this really great collective of businesses and universities around something called the Fundraising Effectiveness Project, FEP for short, which is an outgrowth of the Association of Fundraising Professionals Foundation. And they oversee and analyze all the giving information in the United States, basically, and the largest data set. Whenever they have these phone calls and everybody's all over the place, the guy who heads it always says, tell us something interesting. Tell us something interesting that happened in your last week. And I think that's important because by setting it up that it's not immediately going into just yelling statistics at each other or action items or things of that nature, by actually creating that social culture, it relaxes people. And I've been trying to bring that into my interactions with my company, who, you know, if we're going to be honest, we're all still making adjustments because everybody else is in Chicago. I'm the only one in New York. And so even today I said, when I had a phone call with somebody, the first thing I asked was, hey, you went to two weddings. Like, how was your wedding? Like, I didn't immediately go into work. I wanted to know how they were doing. And I think that's even more important when you're remote.
Yeah, so both of you have talked about the social aspect, but the way you've talked about it is about sort of the content of your conversations to include social stuff, right? And I definitely get that. So talk about that a little bit from the perspective of technology. I'm assuming we all know that we're all connected through different kinds of technology tools, but do you think it's really important for a social component, a chat kind of system or anything like that, to be part of how an organization would really integrate their remote workers? Tim, I'll throw that to you first.
You'll throw that to me first. Okay. I think it is. The technology is actually pretty vital. And this is speaking more on the we failed side as opposed to the we've done an amazing job at it side. And it's not that people aren't trying. It's more the technology almost. I was even talking with Rebecca right before we started this, just before you even joined the thing, about headsets. Just the idea of properly working headsets can be like, so our office manager, before I left, we had this big test and I walked into another room and then one day I worked from home and we used the headset that he got me and it was all these different things. And then I moved to New York and there was a blizzard and like I'm alone in this temporary housing that's literally across from a dump and it's lonely and my only connection is being able to speak to people other than chat. And the headset fails. Like, it just stops working. And I have to, like, reset it every day. And I finally got so fed up that I just skipped over our purchase order process and just paid out of pocket by going to Best Buy. And I can't even remember the last time that I went to a Best Buy.
Right.
And so even little things that we take for granted, such as headsets, like, that's even going to be more important as technology moves forward, because we're very used to being able to quickly do a video chat, or I was even trying to get people to like talk to me on the phone when something failed to do like a quick video hangout. Like technology, getting the right technology is important. Before, like at this point, it's kind of a given that you had to use technology. Now it's a matter of what do we use to do that? And depending on the size of your company, like you might not have a lot of money to buy the really expensive Microsoft systems and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting question, because I fundamentally believe that working on a virtual team is, yes, there are some obstacles compared to working in the office, but I think the base elements are the same. And I think fundamentally what you're doing is you're building a trustful environment. So I think the question you have to ask yourself is, how do I build trust with the constituents or the cohort with which I'm working? I think, as Tim pointed out, that could be a client, and that maybe you don't start out quite as social as maybe our team does. And it could be you know, your team. It can be a friend. So I think the question, or the answer that I would give you, is how technology plays into that depends on where you are in building trust with that individual, a little bit about the nature of the relationship and the terms of the relationship that you're going to have with them. And then you can begin to figure out, okay, what's the best way to communicate with the person? So for example, I wouldn't necessarily suggest you have casual IM checks with clients with whom you're not going to communicate a ton with. Especially if you have an established trust and a rapport, they're not going to get your intonation as well. They're not going to understand potentially sarcasm in an IM. So something like that. So I think IMs make sense in high trust teams where you've got frequent communication. And what we know about building trust, whether in an in-person environment or remote environment, is is frequency increases your potential to build trust. So you need to think about how frequently you're communicating with a person and interacting with a person, so you can kind of have this, I think, this kind of growth curve of what the technology looks like. So say, for example, with a new client, maybe it's a phone and a video at first, because, and I agree, headsets are a big deal. I mean, I am really big in, I can't wear two heads. I don't like headsets that sit on both of my ears. I like a one-eared headset. So there is an element of figuring out what works for you when you work in a virtual team. There's 100% element in that. So once you get to that and you're building trust at the beginning of the relationship, I think video and phone are great, because you can see somebody, you can see their reaction, you ensure that you have their attention, you can see, you know, their more of their body language and how it either is congruent or incongruent with the words that are coming out of their mouth. Then I think as a relationship kind of matures and you get to a high trust area, to be on video isn't always as necessary. And so in the team where we had very high trust, very rarely were we on video, because by that point in time, we knew the tone of everybody's voice so well, we didn't need to be on video because you could hear it. When you work with somebody and they're having a bad day and you've known them for 5 or 6 years, you can't hide it in your voice. So you pick up a different sense of it. So I think the technology you use depends on the trust level. It depends on the type of relationship. But then, you know, one of my goofy little tips is I would never work from home without two screens ever. So right now I can tell you during this podcast, I have the video on one screen and I have other things on a different screen. So when you're trying to actually interact with somebody or take notes or do something along those lines, I definitely believe in that. The other thing that I like to do, and I know I'm being a little long-winded here, is especially in beginning a relationship, is if I'm taking notes in a meeting, I'm always 100% transparent as well. So if you are, from a technology standpoint, if you're beginning to develop a relationship, and it's good that they're hearing you and it's good that they're seeing you, but they also want to know that what they're saying is truly connecting with you. So by literally typing it out on a screen and taking advantage of it, like a Zoom or something like we're using today, and they can see that you're connecting, then you have that extra ability to say, did I get it right? Does this make sense? Does this connect with you? So that there's a validation that what they said was truly heard, if it's a note-taking sort of situation. So those are how I've kind of incorporated technology into building trust in teams along the way. So I think it all depends a little bit on where you are in the relationship, how you're building trust, and what you're looking to get out of it.
Yeah, I will say here at WorkXO, we're all remote. And we have spent many, many weeks trying to figure out the best systems for us. We tried a conference line that did not have video because it was cheaper. And we went back to the video one because it was just so important to be able to see ourselves, you know, to see each other on screen on a regular basis. I mean, it made a huge difference. And I love what you said about the note-taking. I think that's actually really, really critical too. And I've seen several groups doing kind of collaborative note-taking through Google Docs or whatever. So whoever can take notes, you know, and everybody's working on the same document. And there's, I actually have another interesting example, just slightly different to share, but one of the clients that we work with our workplace genome, which is our culture assessment, they realized that one of their offices had quite a different experience of their culture than the other two. And one of the outcomes of that realization was that they decided to actually spend a lot more money, put a lot more budget into plane tickets. Mm-hmm. So in order to, you know, like being part of one umbrella group, despite being a kind of a satellite office, was so important that they actually decided to fly people over, you know, more frequently to make sure that they were really connected. And the only reason you would ever do that is because it's better for business, right? It's better for your organization to work as it should work. So that was just an interesting kind of outcome to this kind of similar topic.
I absolutely agree. I think anytime you can have some in-person meeting, I think it does help jumpstart the trust, jumpstart the relationship, aligns people to a greater extent. But I don't think it's something that's necessary 24/7, 365. Mm-hmm. I think it's that occasional, you know, like it more frequent enough that you can get, you can accomplish the desired goal. I think that's important. Some teams will require more than others. But if you're working on like a high risk, high impact, strategic initiative, I would absolutely make the investment to get those people together with whom you're entrusting that initiative at least once.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's really important. Then when you don't have the benefit of a video, you can at least kind of imagine in your imagination, in your mind, what the person looks like, what their facial expression looks like, you know, how they're laughing, all that sort of stuff. You can definitely assimilate much quicker, I think.
Yeah, Tim, let me ask you something, because you were at Neon before you went remote, right? So obviously they knew you. You'd spent lots of time, you know, in the office.
Yep.
But hypothetically, if part of your job was to build a team in New York,
yep.
How would you translate Neon's culture to these new people who weren't there before?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think about that a lot, because it's not even just, so part of my job is engaging different consultants and in essence, I do see them as an extension of our team.
Yeah.
And so just like you, you know, I would want to treat you with the same respect and bring that passion and culture that we have at our office, right? Otherwise, like, it's not a club that you need a membership in, so to speak. Like, we want people who want to be excited to work with us. So even when I'm here in Albany, I am trying to meet with people. I just, right before this, I set up a meeting with somebody, and we're meeting at Panera. It's like, I can't even remember the last time I've been to a Panera, but being able to go and bring that passion in person there, I think is important. And a big part of what our company really boils down to is the authenticity of working and being made up of people who have a nonprofit background. So whenever I engage with folks, I have a pretty good BS meter. And so if I can see somebody who's just like in it for a quick buck, like that's not the type of culture that we want to foster. But it's even little things. Like, I'll just give one silly example that if I was going to build something here that I'd want to kind of have carried over, and it's little, but I do this all the time. When I was in Chicago, you know those Target, like, gel things for different holidays?
Yeah.
Like I have it here, so, you know, this is, you see it on video, but for the viewers at home or people at home who are just listening, it's like those food clings or happy 4th of July, like you throw it on your window, right? Like on my window that outlooks my lawn, I put them up because we would have it in Chicago all the time. I would just go and buy a bunch of these $2 things and slap them on windows throughout the office, and people would be like, oh, it's St. Patrick's Day coming up, or oh, summer, or I'm going to reorder this and say something, you know, not what it was supposed to say in terms of the original intent of the cling. I'm still doing that here. And I have it for 4th of July right on my window. And it's a little thing. My wife just bought a bunch of them for me. And so it's stuff like that, that culture permeates in sometimes innocuous ways where even the littlest change can affect somebody's mood. And so when you want to have a positive culture, something that's fun, as you scale, as you grow, you don't want to lose that. And so that's very delicate. So even little stuff like that, like, I don't want us to forget that as a company.
Well, you know what that is? We call that artifacts and rituals. And they make a huge difference. They're really, really important. And actually, the smaller and funner they are, the better. You know, like it's these little things that connect you back to the company.
Well, we had early on when I just started working at Neon about 6 years ago, and the president of the company was still selling, and it was an office that like six people were crammed into two rooms. The office used to belong to somebody that for some reason had a bell at the front to announce when you got into the office.
Oh, yeah.
So I grabbed the bell as our only dedicated salesperson, and I put it on my desk, and whenever I got a sale, I would ding the bell. And part of it would be to announce to the support team, oh God, there's another person that we have to like support.
Yeah.
And so, and you know, like 1 month I dinged the bell 28 times and they wanted to murder me. But the reality is that I told them, I said, this bell represents our ability to hire more staff, to pay better salaries, mm-hmm. all those different things. And people, they still use that bell. They still have the bell in, and we're a multi-million dollar company at this point, and they still use the bell, and somebody even put like a taco on it. It took me a minute to get the joke, but then I was like, oh, that's funny. But even that little ritual, that's a very important ritual. That's a ritual that also, whenever it happens, our CEO breathes a sigh of relief. So,
well, that ritual represents how you got to where you are, right? Yeah. It represents the company's success. It's like huge.
Well, and it's even cool, and then I'll be quiet. But it's even cool to be like on a video conference or a phone call with somebody in a different department, and still in the background, I hear that bell. And I smile. So
I think that's a great story. I love that. That's awesome.
Yes, that is really awesome. So actually, this is a perfect note to end on because we are just about out of time. But let me ask.
Whoa, really? That one?
Yeah, I told you. But let me ask each of you for a little closing thought, like maybe some a little bit of advice if for an organization thinking about building a team of remote people, mm-hmm. what would you say? Rebecca, I'll start with you.
I think if you're thinking about a remote team, you need to think about the skills that everybody has on the team, how they're going to adapt, what you need to do in order to help them be successful, how you're going to need to engage with them. Some people are, you know, really excited to work remote. And other times there's a little more trepidation. So I think you've got to look at the different skill sets as a leader, understand what support they need in order to be successful in their roles, to preserve the trust that you've established. And I think, and also to preserve their rituals. I love the story of the bell. We had a Staples, that was easy button, you know, that you would hear from various locations during our calls. So we had this similar sort of lightheartedness, and we'd play sound clips and things like that when, you know, wah, wah, wah. I think that's really what it is a matter of, is understanding what makes your staff tick, what's unique about your culture, what helps them engage and gets them excited. You know, I loved recently, there was a post by Jamie about the 100% engagement organization. And I thought, wow, wouldn't we all be so lucky to be 100% engaged? And to me, it's the same effort remotely as it is on site. It's getting to know your staff, it's caring about your staff, and understanding what elements within your culture work, and then working to expound on those.
Yeah, awesome. Tim, what about you?
I would say that the important thing, no matter what, because the reality is, with the changing workforce economy, remote work is going to become a de facto standard, not the exception. Mm-hmm. And so if you have a strong mission that you believe in and can articulate that to everybody who joins, regardless of if they've been there from the beginning or just joining, you know, your fast growing organization, if you can get people on board with what makes your organization unique, then that is going to make it any transition easier. The other thing to help ensure that, that hits on all the points that we talked today, email is the final part of this. That's the one where you use that to say, okay, here are the action items that we need to follow up to have a concrete log of what we talked about, but do not use that to solve the big issues. Get on the phone, do a quick video chat if that's possible. Don't use email to hash out really, really difficult conversations. The best relationships that I have with my company are the people that I am constantly talking to. And the ones that I want to work on are the ones where we're not coming in contact as much. And that goes back to what we've all talked about, especially Rebecca's earlier points. So the best way to get your culture and get that mission, people excited about it, is not through someone reading an email of a PowerPoint slide that you sent.
Here's our mission.
Here's our
PowerPoint
mission.
101.
We don't do that. What I really give my company some commendable background is we have these quarterly presentations by our chief operations person, and he ensures that I can get on there, that I can follow along, and that's been really vital for me feeling connected. And it's also helped influence how, I mean, Maddie, you and I, we got on the phone to start our conversations, Rebecca.
Yeah.
Same here. I'm not just email, you know, I might say an email to let's talk, but the actual talk and the actual hammering out of how we're going to work together, that's a phone call. And eventually I'd love to, you know, meet y'all in person too. So that's important as well.
Well, it's all relationships between human beings, right? At the end
yeah.
of the day. Anyway, that is all we have for today. Thank you guys so much for coming on the podcast today and for, you know, digging into this topic. I think, Tim, like you said, this topic is only going to become more and more and more important. So I think it's a really good one. And I know there'll be more things to dig into in the future related to this. So thank you again for being on our podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maddie.
And that was the Culture Chat today. We'll have some highlights up on the blog soon. Find out more about WorkXO and how to map your workplace genome at workxo.com.